Welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. I am Lauren Williams, one of the OG consultants at Student Loan Planner. I was, in fact, the second hire. But guess who I have on the podcast today? The first hire, not the owner, but the first hire after the owner. It is the real deal Holyfield OG, Rob Burtman. Hey, how are you doing today?
Hey, everybody. I'm good. Yeah, Lauren, I remember it's been a long road together. The company has grown incredibly fast. It's kind of amazing to even think about how much has grown.
Yeah, I think we're now 11 consultants deep. Stay tuned for a new episode with our newest consultant coming up soon, as a matter of fact. All right, so today we will be talking about something that has been a thorn in our sides over the course of our professional year. So Rob is both a CFP and a CFA. I am a CFP and a CSLP. The whole point in us telling you about all these fancy certifications that we know a lot about a lot as it pertains to finances. And one of the things that neither Rob nor I am a big fan of is whole life insurance. People get taken advantage of so frequently. It really, really just makes us upset. And so today we wanted to walk through why whole life insurance sucks. Rob, do you think that's a good topic, a good title for today's episode?
I do. I mean, to be more, I guess, more even keel, it's widely misused, right? It's widely oversold. Too many people have it that shouldn't. And we're going to talk about why that's the case. But yeah, I mean, I've been an investment professional since 2001. I've been in the investment industry for 22 years. So I am the real OG of the SLP crew because I think I'm the oldest person at 43 years old. Ooh. So I've seen a little bit of this, and I've seen how whole life or permanent insurance is used for good and mostly how it's used for bad. And I'm excited to dive in and talk with you, Lauren, because I know you've seen a lot of great, not a lot of great and horrible stuff with this. And so we want to make sure that you all out there know if it should be a piece of your financial plan. Right. And for most of you, it won't be.
99%. 99% chance no, it is not for you. So yeah, bit of a disclaimer before we jump in is that Student Loan Planner does have an insurance arm where they sell disability and term, but neither Rob nor I sell disability or term. That's a separate Student Loan Planner arm. And guess what? They do not sell whole life insurance. So that should be in and of itself something that tells you, like, this is not something that SLP believes in as an overall value standpoint for this company. So, and I also wanted to say, Rob, at 43, you are the one that is just outside of the official title of millennial. So
I am.
Millennials are now this year 26 to 42. So you really are an old bird, you Gen Xer.
I'm a cusper. I was born in 79.
You do okay, though. I've seen your reels on Instagram. You seem pretty millennial to me. If you haven't checked them out, know. Family budget expert, everybody.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm trying to get a little bit silly, and I try to stay young, and part of that's having kids. And so it's like, when, you know, before it might be like, who's this weird guy? But now it's like, oh, he's just a good dad. You know, he's like entertaining for his kids.
Yeah, absolutely. So without further ado, let's jump in and talk about this whole life insurance. And I think I'd like to start really with a story on, you know, what's even prompting us to talk about this topic. It's still coming up. We've done episodes in the past about this. We talk about it, you know, frequently in blogs and, you know, other places, but you still get people that don't know, haven't heard. And so if you're newer to this podcast, this is, like you said, a newer topic for you. And just this morning, I had a gentleman come my way who was putting 3% into his 401k. So very, very small amount when we all know from a student loan perspective, or maybe we don't know, I'm going to tell you that a easy thing for you to do is put money into your 401k. That's going to save you money on taxes, get you ready for retirement, and also lower your student loan plan. He was putting 3%, which was probably less than $600 a month into his 401k, and then also putting $600 a month into a whole life insurance policy. And it was just like big red flag going off for me. No, no, no. And so as I got to talking to the gentleman, he, you know, said he didn't really know why he had it. He felt like it was kind of a scam. The guy was very salesy, but he didn't really feel like he could get out of it either. And, you know, there was a whole bunch of myths that, you know, he thought, well, that the gentleman told him as it relates to why this was a good product for him, that were all untrue. And that's what we're going to be talking through. So it is happening all the time. Yuck.
Right. I mean, I think a lot of it is Well, we'll get into why. We'll get into the why. But first, the need for life insurance is a real need. And so the way I like to think about life insurance is when you're young, you have all the future expenses ahead of you. You know, you're going to buy a house, you're going to have kids, maybe send them to college, you're going to have cars, you're going to have vacations. The idea behind insurance is when you're young in your career, you haven't had time yet to build up your wealth. So if something happened to me and I haven't had time to build up my wealth and I have a family, I'm leaving them with nothing if I don't have insurance. But over time, if we do things right and get great financial advice, work with awesome financial planners, then our wealth will build over time. Plus the future expenses go down. So kids graduate from college, house is paid off. The need for, and you had time to build your wealth, the need for insurance isn't really there anymore. And so the idea behind whole life or permanent insurance is that you have it for your whole life, right? You have it your entire life until you die, you're paying premiums. Mm-hmm. And what they say is that your premium is going to be the same. It will never go up, or it should stay pretty much the same your entire life. Well, when you're in your 20s, that's like your prime, and 30s and 40s, that's like your prime wealth building part. And if you're putting it into this product, rather than putting it into a Roth IRA or your 401k or paying down credit card debt or building an emergency fund, you're really setting yourself up to be way behind in the future. Because at the end of the day, whole life insurance is just, simply put, it is a super high fee, high commission product that has very, very, very low investment returns. Mm-hmm. So you're paying a lot for like very little.
I always call it like a really crappy savings account, because that's what it ends up being as far as returns. There's been a lot of, like you said, studies and things, and like the high end is like 2%, like, which in this current market that we're getting 3.5 on savings accounts. So it's a really, really crappy product.
It is. And let's talk about how it works, right? So The idea behind insurance is you pay a premium. And if I were to die and I'm paying life insurance, then my beneficiaries, could be my family, could be a trust, could be whatever, will get the proceeds, the death benefit when I die. With whole life insurance or permanent insurance, the premium is a lot higher than term. Sometimes it's 5-10 times the premium. Mm-hmm. And so part of it goes toward that death benefit coverage. And then the other part goes into this cash value accumulation account, which is just a fancy way to say it's an investment account that's invested in stocks, bonds, cash, real estate. But the problem with that, all sounds good, right? But the problem with that is that, again, super high fee, super high commission product. So that's kind of how the insurance works. And we'll talk about the fees and commissions. But anything to add there, Lauren?
I think you got it covered right there. I think the one thing that kind of stands out to me as I think about it is this idea that, like you said, the really high fees is the part that they don't ever talk about, but they do talk about the investment aspect of it. So you think of like, sitting on that consumer side of the table, the things that you're hearing is like, oh, real estate. Like, oh, I want to invest in real estate. I want to be in that. You can get a REIT and be in real estate. You can get an ETF that has real estate in it and be doing much better on return. So I think just thinking through what the little pieces of the puzzle are that the person is telling you as they're trying to tell you about this wonderful, awesome thing is, hey, wait, does this really make sense? Like you also mentioned like a death benefit. So that's the point of any insurance, health insurance. If you get ill, you want your insurance to kick in because a catastrophe has happened. Auto insurance, you want your insurance to kick in because a catastrophe has happened. Life insurance, a catastrophe of some sort has happened. You no longer exist. You want the benefit to go to the people, to your point, Rob, that might need that cash from your life because they no longer have your earnings to be able to support themselves. So be thinking about it as that. This is something that's going to cover me in the event of a catastrophic loss. It is not, in fact, an investment vehicle.
Totally. And I can tell you, I'll tell a couple stories or what I've seen and then talk about the cause of that. So I've analyzed a bunch of whole life policies and permanent insurance policies over the years, just by nature being in the business. And I have not yet found a case where up to 10 years and maybe a little bit beyond, where the amount of money of premiums that have been paid into the policy. Remember, this is supposed to be an investment product. So You would think the goal is, you know, if you invest $1,000 a month, let's say, for 10 years and you earn a 7% return and you're putting $1,000 a month, that $120,000 invested at 7% annual returns will grow to be $200,000. You've only put in $120,000 and the returns have given you an extra $80,000. That your money is working for you, right? Mm-hmm. That's how it's supposed to work.
But
but when it comes to these whole life policies, not only has the cash value in the one, I'm talking every single one I've analyzed that has been the 10 years or less, not only has it not grown, it is less than the value of the premiums put in. So for example, if someone has put in $1,000 a month into a whole life policy thinking they're getting an investment return, the actual value of the cash value is less than what they put in. In other words, they would have been better off putting money in the bank or putting it under their mattress than putting it into these policies. And I'll tell you why in a sec, but first of all, I want to see if you have seen anything like that too.
Yeah, I just think of like the things that I've experienced as well. So like you said, in communities where people don't have a lot of money, in communities where a lot of minorities like don't have a lot of financial literacy, my particular background, what it's been sold as, or that cash value component, is like you said, this investment piece of the puzzle. And the reason that sometimes people are like really excited about it, like, this is awesome, you should also get it, is because they're not able to save on a monthly basis. So they're stretching themselves so thin to be able to put money into this life insurance. And they're like, I also have this cash value. Then something happens and they don't have an emergency fund. And so guess what happens? The, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 that they got into that cash life, you know, saves the day for them. But they don't ever think about the fact that, like you said, if they've been doing $500 a month for the last 3 years, that, you know, that was 6,000 times three, or 18,000. Like, you have $18,000 you could have had as your emergency fund. Instead, this life insurance is saving you, quote unquote, in this moment with $2,000 or $3,000 in whatever type of emergency you're having. So that's an area where I see people not being able to do the math or see it, or see the full picture of how this works, and realize that they're being gypped, and also would go and tell a friend that this is a good thing, quote unquote.
Or worse yet, they don't have enough money in cash value to take out. Mm-hmm. And so they end up going into credit card debt at 20 to 30%. And so you're being charged 20 to 30% interest, and you're not earning anywhere close to that in these whole life policies. In fact, it's a negative return for the first 10 years.
Exactly.
So why is it a negative return, right? Because like we talked about, the cash is being invested in investments, right? But here's the real problem. It's all about the commissions. And I can tell you that this is not easy to find anywhere. You cannot find this in the disclosures when they give you their policies. I've looked and looked and looked. The only reason I know this is because the person, my insurance person, who I'm no longer using, tried to sell it to me. And this was maybe 10 years ago when I had my second kid. And I was like, well, I don't, honestly, I think I know about it, but I don't. So can you tell me a little bit about how the fees work? He couldn't explain it to me. So I said, well, do you have someone that will? He brought his manager. His manager couldn't explain it to me. So then I went up the rung one more step, and I finally got it explained to me. And I honestly don't think, I think that people who sell whole life insurance, they're not bad people, a lot of them, right? They think they're doing the right thing. This is their training, their background. And so they feel like they're helping people. And so their heart's in the right place. But the method is, in my mind, is completely wrong. So here's how the commissions work. And this is going to blow your mind.
Uh-oh.
And this is any insurance, really. This is term insurance. And these are numbers are not exact per company, but they'll be pretty close. So the first year premium, any guess how much of that first year premium is commission? But so let's say, for example, if you work with an investment advisor, they'll charge 1 to 1.5% of your investments, right? So if you put $1,000 in, they're charging you $10 on that first $1,000, or $15. Over the course of a year, if you invest $12,000, you're probably going to pay about $12 in fees to $18 in fees. Or if you have it robo-advised, it's going to be a fraction of that, less than a dollar probably. Mm-hmm. With that in mind, any idea on what the commissions are for the first year of life insurance?
You're telling me that they're astronomical. We can hear it in your voice, Rob. I'm going to go with like maybe 6 months worth of whatever you put in, because that would be pretty, like I said, in this $500 example we've been kind of using, you know, 6 times 5, what, $3,000 of I put my money in. Do they get like all of that?
They get more.
What?
More than that. So the first year commission, and now the person who is selling the whole life doesn't necessarily get all of this. This goes to the company, and then there's a split, right? Just like any commission business. 100% of the first year premium is commission. So you put in that $500 a month, none of that actually hits your cash value. It's all commission and fees. So 6,000 in, 6,000 out. Okay.
Wow.
It goes down over time, but guess what it is in year two?
Maybe like 90% of my premiums.
Well, it's 50%, 50, right? So it's half. And then it goes down to 25%, and then eventually goes down to a trailing 3 to 5%. Now, even that trailing is much higher than any other investment product out there, right? Any other investment product might charge you 1 to 1.5% tops. They're charging 3 to 5% of the premium that you put in.
Forever and ever.
Forever and ever. But okay, so think about it. So if you pay 100% commission in year one and 50% commission in year two, you've paid for 2 years, 24 months. 18 of those months of payments is commission. You're only left with a quarter of what you put in that would even enter that cash value. I'll give you an example of this. So I had a client who had paid into a whole life policy for 3 years, and they put in, I think it was like, let's just call it $1,000 a month, $36,000. Their cash value in their account was $20,000 after 3 years. So $16,000 less. But the surrender value, which is like if you cancel the policy, what you get out of it, was $6,000. So they had put in 36, but if they canceled it, they would only get six.
This is where I like really get angry, because to your point, I have also analyzed quite a few of these. And a lot of times people are coming to me and I'm looking at your full financial picture, and we get to these insurance policies and they're like, yeah, I got insurance. Look at me. Like, one of the things I did, because a lot of it, you know, when I'm asking questions like, oh, don't have an accountant. Oh, don't really understand my 401k. You know, there's these things that they recognize are wrong, but they think like, I got insurance, Lauren, you're going to be so proud. And then I'm looking at the policy and I'm like, oh my gosh. And then it's like, we have to decide, do I hold on to this for a couple more years to even get out of this area where the surrender fee is crappy and I can't really get anything? Or, you know, do we just like throw it all in right now and just say we would go get some different insurance? But it's ridiculous to see these numbers. You just said, what, 36,000 went into this policy? Here's your six. You can have it back. Like, what?
Right. It's hard to convince people once they're in it to get out of it, because again, if you have one of these policies, if you're out there listening, like, oh my gosh, I made a mistake. There's nothing wrong with you. It's what you were told. It's what you were told. But the difficult conversation comes in, why is the surrender value only $6,000? It's because that's all that's in the account in real life. The cash value is not there. It's already gone. And so you have to have the conversation. We put in 36. This thing is worth six. And we're still paying $1,000 a month. Is it just worth it to keep it? And the answer, in my opinion, is no. Because you're still paying 25% in year three, you put in 1,000, 250 of that is still going to commission, right? And then after that, it's still going to be the most expensive fee product, investment product that you have. And plus, this client also had $25,000 of credit card debt.
Wow.
Which, as we know, if we put $1,000 toward that, that would have been gone.
Yeah.
So, and they had credit card debt when this policy was sold to them. So it's all about the fees that are really what makes this really, really bad. You know, I had a client come to me and said, I'm invested in a blended diversified portfolio of stocks, bonds, cash, real estate. I'd be like, great. If they said, well, but it's in cash value, I would say, ooh, you're paying a ton of fees. And you're not going to earn that 5 to 7% they're projecting, right? They have their projection and they have the guaranteed rate of return. And those are different. They would have been better off putting money under their mattress.
Literally under their mattress.
Exactly. And they would have been in a better position.
Oh my goodness.
Have you ever seen anything like that?
I have seen quite a few situations. Luckily, I think the word about term insurance is getting out and people are less and less getting involved in their whole life policies. But I wanted to circle back to, you know, your point about like the person selling it is not a bad person, because I think that that's a really thing that we should, like, someone who is listening to this, like you said, the number of life insurance salesmen that are out there, someone is listening and they're offended. They're like, oh my goodness. But what I've experienced is, like you said, these are sometimes very religious, very high moral, very high value. One of the things you touched on, though, is that the person can't explain the insurance policy to you. If you ask the right questions, they can't explain it. They've been trained to sell. They've been trained to tell you exactly how awesome it is, and all they've been told is how awesome it is. You went up to the next rung, and they also said, oh, I have no idea how this actually works. And once someone actually does learn that, a lot of people that we see are leaving the insurance industry. They're like, this doesn't feel good to me. Or they're staying in insurance, but now they're switching over and they are pushing like a term product or something that is a lot more appropriate based on a person's personal situation. But it's all about knowledge. And the lack of knowledge, the ignorance is the one thing that can be so damaging and so destructive. And I've seen it over and over again in my community. And I also was a victim of that. Very beginning of my career as a professional professional athlete. I was single, 20 years old. I had $1 million of whole life insurance. I was paying roughly $6,000 a year. And this is back in like 2004-ish. So God knows what it costs now for this $1 million of whole life insurance. When I'm 20, I'm in the best shape of my life. For $20 a month, I probably could have got $2 or $3 million of insurance and, you know, been set up for the point at which I wanted to get a family or kids or things like that, which is another point that a lot of times people talk about. Like, when do you need insurance? You know, if you're single and you don't have any kids and things like that, maybe it's not even the right time to get it. You've got to decide what's appropriate for you based on what your future looks like. But, you know, the person who sold me the insurance, I still wouldn't classify as a bad person to this day, but I absolutely did not need that insurance.
Definitely. And all the people I know that sell insurance, or most of them, are good people. They're very kind people. They're trying to do the best they can. They're trying to do what they can. But the way that the insurance companies are set up, and there are a couple in particular that have really this down to a science, they hire young people who have networks of young professionals. Mm-hmm. And they say, go out and close X amount, have X amount of meetings a week, and try to close this amount. And if you do, you're going to make this much money. And here's why it's good for them, right? We all see the commercials. We all see the marketing materials. And they think, great, I can help people and make money. This is great. So why are the insurance companies incentivizing young people to sell to their friends? Well, typically, young people don't have investable assets. So they can't go about the traditional financial planning route, although there's now flat fee advising, right? It's very explicit fees, $3,000 for a financial plan or whatever, and that's it. Where the AUM model, the assets under management model, where you're being charged a percentage, it's hard to find 20-somethings that have enough to make it worthwhile. Mm-hmm. So if a young friend of yours has $100,000 and they charge 1.5%, the commission on that's going to be $1,500 a year, right?
Yeah, you can't make a living as a financial planner on that. So it's like, well, why waste my time?
Totally. But if you sell them a whole life policy and you get them to pay $500 a month, that's $6,000 a year commission mm-hmm. for the company. And then the next year it's $3,000. So they make $9,000 in commission over 2 years instead of maybe $3,000 or $4,000, you know, if they even have that investable money to start with. So that is my opinion on why the industry is set up for that, because it's a way to collect fees and commissions for people that haven't yet built up their wealth. Because if you think about, Lauren, who are the kind of people that get the most calls and you see most often in these policies? What professions do you normally see?
Oh, for me, it's dentistry and physicians that in residency, you know, hit them up while they're still early, young, you know, they're going to make a lot of money. You're telling them how important it is to make sure that they secure their family's future. Now that, like, I've seen that quite a bit. Is there a different profession that you've seen?
No, those are the keys. It's like they have a list of residents and newly minted attending physicians or dentists who just graduated dental school. They just had their income jump way up from residency salary to full on attending salary, sometimes 5-6x the income in a short amount of time. And they're looking for things to do. And so they can easily sell $1,000 a month insurance policy or $2,000 a month insurance policy. I also see this a lot in the real estate industry, commercial real estate professionals, because their income is pretty inconsistent, but can be very high over time. And so usually it's the high income professions, which there's a lot of our audience here at Student Loan Planner. Graduate level professionals who are doing that kind of work.
So the thing that stands out to me about what you said is the way that the system is set up. And I think that is why people listen to podcasts in the first place. They're trying to get better handle on their personal finances. And we don't understand the system. So it's like, I don't understand my personal finances. But then as I learn more about my personal finances, I realize there's like 10 rabbit holes. So it's like, oh, I learned this about budgeting. And now here's the 10 rabbit holes. Here's the 10 different ways to budget. You know, now we're talking about insurance. Oh, there's term insurance and whole. I should avoid it. But also, like, if you really want to know, like, here's all the different things you need to know. And it gets overwhelming for people. But understanding the way the system works, the more you know, the more you can fight back against it. And to your point, you said financial planners traditionally have not wanted to deal with people who don't have a lot of assets. But now you have networks like XYPN, where they're focusing on young professionals. You have, I think it's Garrett Planning Network, where they work only hourly. So you're not going to be measured, or you're not going to be able to only get access to financial planning help. Or a certified financial planner, which is the person who's kind of like a general practitioner in the financial planning industry, you're not only going to be able to get access to them if you have $1 million. Because you're like, once I've gotten $1 million in the bank, what do I need a financial planner for? You do. You do still need a financial planner. But we all need financial planners as well, no matter what your earning levels are. So don't be afraid to find someone that is appropriate for you. And it, don't be afraid to look and say like, hey, this is how the system always works. This is what I know about it. But is there any other alternative? That's what we're talking about. It's like insurance people hold themselves out as financial advisors all the time. So that's another piece of the puzzle. People say, oh, my financial advisor, blah, 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 fill in the blank. And then I hear they only have $1 million of whole life insurance. They don't have any investment accounts. They don't have any other, you know, aspects of their financial life in place. And it's like, that's not a financial advisor. That's someone who sold you whole life insurance. Whereas you actually need someone that can look at your full financial picture. So all I'm saying in this messaging is don't be afraid to kind of look beyond what is right in front of you and see how you can best be helped, because there are professionals out there that are willing and ready to help you. And don't be afraid to, you know, overcome that fear. Like, oh my God, I bought this thing. If you're listening to us and you're like, I'm feeling shame, I'm feeling guilt, you know, I feel a little bit embarrassed about what I didn't know about this. Like, you guys have pulled the cloak off, but also I have no idea where to start. Start by saying, hey, this is not okay, and I'm going to look into this more. This podcast is just the introduction. There's a lot of places that you can go. And I think actually, Rob, you and I, maybe we should do a podcast about getting help and, you know, that idea that people like don't even know what they need sometimes, and like how they can overcome that idea of like, I'm scared to get help about this thing that is really scary for me.
I think that's great. I would love to do that. I think it's super important. And you're right. It's never been easier to get financial advice, good financial advice, I should say. Mm-hmm. There are any number of different advisors out there that are really reputable. You can see the reviews. You can see what people are talking about. I mean, access to investing. I mean, I remember when I was starting out, I mean, you used to charge 5 cents a share to trade. So, or like $20 per trade. Now trading is free. You used to only be able to get into A share or C share mutual funds paying 6 or 5% on the front end, or trailing, you know, 1% a year or 2% a year. And now you can trade for a fraction of a tenth of a percent, not even a tenth of a percent, but less than that. There's so many young people out there that care about helping people, kind of like your story of how you got into financial planning, that people are trying to come up with better economic models to serve those who haven't been served in the past and help provide access to high quality financial planning, high quality financial literacy at a low cost and get exactly what they need. So I would say life insurance, the industry in general, is kind of antiquated because it came out in a time where marginal tax rates were like 80%, right? So people used to sell it as, oh, it's tax deferred. You'll never pay taxes on the investments in here. And that was worth something back then. And it's worth a little bit today, but only if you've exhausted every single other aspect of financial planning. I mean, whole life insurance does have a path for super wealthy people who they've exhausted every other option. They've maxed out. They've got millions of dollars in retirement. They've got their backdoor Roths going. They've got their brokerage accounts. I mean, they've got everything in place, right, Lauren?
Mm-hmm. Literally, they've got money coming out of their ears. And that is yet another one of those sales pitches. This is what rich people are doing. You'll hear a life insurance agent tell you that all the time. And you're like, oh my goodness, if this is what the rich people are doing, let me get on board and start doing what the rich people are doing. It literally only makes sense for somebody who, like you said, they already maxed out their 401k, already maxed out their Roth IRA. Like, they've got money coming out the wazoo and they're trying to find yet another place to put their money. It's an additional vehicle for them. For 99% of America, to your point, 360 million people, we know that more than half of them don't even have enough to cover a $500 emergency. So we can't cover an emergency. We're probably not putting enough into our 401k. We don't need this whole life insurance. And so that's an easy way to be thinking about like why this is not appropriate. Another thing you brought up, though, you mentioned the education piece of the puzzle. They sell it also as, you know, a great place to be able to hide funds to get ready for your kids' education so that, you know, from a FAFSA standpoint, your income is lower or whatever the case may be. Do you want to talk a little bit about like that? I know that was one of the things that the gentleman mentioned that I was talking to recently as well.
Yeah, I mean, it is a way to do that. It's a super high expensive way. I'm a big believer that you don't do things to totally disrupt your financial life in order to save a little bit of money here or there. I mean, there are other things, other better things you can do if you're like on the cusp of qualifying. But I feel like there's kind of this mindset sometimes of I'm going to hide all my assets, or I'm going to put them all over here so I can declare bankruptcy or get out of my student debt. And I just feel like that mindset doesn't serve. It's kind of like, you know, some people have an anti-wealth mindset where they're against it, or they feel like, you know, and that's okay. But sometimes what happens is that mindset stops people from accumulating wealth themselves because they feel like there's a conflict. Like, I can't be rich because I think there's a disparity, which is, again, whatever you believe is fine, but just know that these are mindsets that can hold us back. I would think a bigger issue with this whole life and how it's sold is just, if you need money, just take money out. You can take it out as a loan. You know, so they say you can rely on this money if you need it, kind of like what you were talking about before, where you've got this forced savings, which then you can take the money out. The fallacy there is that you are actually charged 6 to 8% interest on that money that you take out of your whole life policy. And then they say, when you put it back, if you put it back, don't worry, we're going to act as if you invested the whole time. We're going to give you those investment returns you would have earned. The problem is, most people don't put money back into their insurance policy once they take it out. In fact, they rely on it and rely on it and rely on it until it eventually goes away for good. Like the policy has to be canceled because there's not enough to pay the premium. So I think that's a big fallacy too. There's this whole concept called infinite banking, where you kind of become your own bank in your insurance policy. But what we talked about before is you actually have less to borrow from yourself because of all the high fees and commission. And then you have to pay interest on the policy that you take out anyway, when you would be better off putting money in a bank and then taking a loan out against the bank, and you would have a lot more money saved up, a lot greater net worth if you kind of invested instead. And you can get a much better loan from any financial institution. It doesn't have to be a traditional bank, it could be anywhere. That's going to be much better than taking it out in the whole life policy.
Yeah, I think what you just explained is, you know, how people who have of lower income levels are taken advantage of. They are preying on people with very little income and actually putting you in a worse financial situation, which is one of the problems with creating generational wealth, closing the racial wealth divide, all of those different things that we're constantly talking about. They're preying on the idea of what you don't know. So people want to make good decisions for their kids. They're like, I want to be able to pay for my kids' education. You know, let me do this thing because this is what they said. But you might have forgot to do something very simple. It's like, am I even going to be in the realm of people who need to hire? Do I have enough income to even need to be thinking about this strategy so that I don't have the income to, so I can qualify for FAFSA or whatever? Like, you might not even be in the income level where that's relevant, period. But they painted it as a picture of like something else that can help you. You know, then there's the piece of the puzzle of like, this is not absolutely something that's going to help me over time. Rob just gave you 97 examples of like why this is not a good idea. And I think that the key piece of the puzzle is like tuning into like, hey, am I being sold something that's actually going to prevent me from building wealth? Or am I being sold something that's going to help me gain wealth? Am I having a hard time saving? And is this something that like, oh, I could see myself getting this money in here thinking that this was a good investment, but then, oh, I didn't realize that, you know, I could just put this money in a savings account and I don't have to worry about all these stipulations related to getting my money out later on down the road. These are all totally the things that happen that get people preyed upon. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really bad because what ends up happening is they have less money to draw on because a lot of it's gone to fees and commissions, and they put themselves in a bad situation when they take it out. It's really bad for anyone who is not super duper wealthy, who has exhausted every single other avenue of investments. So yes, it is what rich people do, but it's because rich people have exhausted every other means if they've done it right.
This is depressing. This is like, I like to think of this as like reverse Robin Hood. That's what I'm going to start calling it. Like, they're robbing from the poor and giving to the rich, taking people who already don't have a lot, taking the little bit that they have, and then making themselves filthy rich. Like,
yeah. I mean, maybe we can turn this around, Lauren, and let's talk through some things that people should do instead.
Okay. Yeah, let's do this. Finish on a high note, people.
Yeah. So Lauren, what else can people do if they're thinking about taking out whole life insurance that would be much more positive for their future wealth instead of getting in a whole life policy?
Well, at the very top of the show, we talked about this term insurance, and we didn't go a whole lot into it today, but it is the alternative. The example I always like to give is like $1 million policy. You could probably get for $50 a month if you're pretty young. Whole life insurance for that same $1 million was probably like 500. And so to your point, like 10 times as much. Spend the $50 a month, get your $1 million of insurance, make sure that your family is covered in the event of the loss of your life, that income that you're providing and that support you're providing can be replaced while you go ahead and build wealth. Take that other $450 and invest it. So instead, get yourself some term and invest the difference, is what I'm saying, based on what that person is telling you you can afford to pay for your whole life insurance, which is probably going to be much less coverage than you would get for term insurance anyway.
Absolutely. I think it's really important that people set the financial foundation. And what I consider the financial foundation is credit card debt free. Doesn't matter if it's 0% interest or whatever, get rid of all of it. An emergency fund of whatever you feel is necessary. If your income is unpredictable, you need more than if someone has a super steady income. You know, most people say 3 months, but you could go plus or minus on either side. And then three is getting the max match from your employer retirement account. If they offer a match, make sure you're taking full advantage of that. If you're not doing any of that, that is going to give you the biggest bang for your buck. It's going to set you up for financial success right there, and you'll have your bases covered. I mean, imagine having no credit card debt, having a cash cushion in place, and making sure that you're investing for the long term in the most efficient way possible. Like, how much better off would you feel under that circumstance?
Rob, there is somebody who is listening to this podcast, has been listening to us for a year. They love our podcast, and they still not done any of those three things. What do you think it is that's holding them back from doing this? My thought process is that it's not sexy. They're listening because they're like, you guys give some good advice, but I really want to know when you're going to one episode tell us how to make a million, take my $1 and turn it into a million. Like, can't you give them something more sexy to do than those three things?
You know, I mean, the number one predictor of future financial success isn't what you do with the money. It's how much you have left over in the first place. So a lot of times we feel like we have to budget or we have to give up what we love and cut out the bad stuff. But a better way to think about it, right, a more empowering, positive mindset is, how can I take every single dollar that I have and deploy it in a way that helps me live my best life, and everything else, let's put it towards building my wealth in the best way possible. And if you think about, I want to live my best life and build my wealth over time so I can, you know, have that financial independence, think about it that way rather than, oh, I have to do all this stuff and this is boring or I don't understand. If we start thinking of approaching it that way, you start thinking about your money differently and better, right?
Amen. Hallelujah. Today is action day. There's somebody who is listening to this podcast, who has been listening to this podcast, and you still are working on that credit card debt, slowly but surely. Let's turn it up a notch. You know that you can put 1 or 2 more percent into your 401k. Come on, you can do it. Hang up the podcast and go do that thing now. Start putting the money into the emergency fund. Set up the auto transfer as soon as you're done listening. The basics will get you where you need to go. And you know, we've been saying the same thing over and over and over again. So why not give it a try?
And we have to add, of course, if you have six-figure student loan debt, you need to have a clear path on how to pay that back. So make sure you get a student loan consult also, because you can actually save a ton of money if you go about paying your student loans in the more efficient way. And student loan rules, as we all know, you all know out there, super complicated, super different than any other kind of debt out there. So let's get that cleared up. And Lauren, exactly what you said, like, let's get this stuff moving.
All right. This has been another episode of the Student Loan Planner podcast. If you have student loan debt, like Rob said, and you don't know where to find us, you found this podcast, but we are at studentloanplanner.com. Very easy, very simple. You can set up a 60-minute consultation and we will create a plan for you. We will also point you in the right direction as it relates to some of this stuff, because everybody on our team is a CSLP, CFP, CFA. We've got all kinds of financial titles, so we can help you a little bit above and beyond just getting your student loan plan in place. And we're going to be taking a comprehensive look at things. So don't be afraid to take action. Let's get going. I'll see you the next time.